This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. More than 90,000 people in America are waiting for a kidney transplant, and sadly, about 12 of these patients will die every day because there aren't enough donors. But some advances and changes to the way live donor kidney transplants are being done is making a difference. And here with more on this is Dr. Vaughn Whitaker, assistant professor of surgery, specializing in hepatobiliary and pancreatic surgery and transplant services at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Whitaker. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So there have been some changes in the way we now do kidney transplants. Can you tell us about that?
So one of the primary issues, as you mentioned in your introduction, is that there are a lot of people waiting for transplantation. There are not enough donors. We have been tweaking this for the last few decades and trying to increase the number of transplants within the country. Living donation has been one of the areas we see that there's an unlimited potential that's there, because you have more live people walking around than there are people on dialysis or waiting. So there's an unlimited potential in living donors.
Again, you can exist with one kidney, so that if you give up a kidney, clearly it's not life-threatening to the donor.
Absolutely. One kidney, the first transplantation of this kind was done in 1954. In fact, it earned Joseph Murray the Nobel Prize in transplantation, which he deservedly got in 1992, just because he was able to transplant a pair of twins at about age 25. The other one died just 2 years ago, well in his 80s, and unrelated to
the transplant.
Unrelated to the fact that he donated his kidney.
And I might add, kidney transplants have a very high success rate at this stage.
Absolutely. In living donors, we're seeing success rates in the high 90s, 98%. Of course, you have to be completely voluntary in your ability to donate. You have to be over 18, and you have had to express a desire, uncoerced, to do this for your friend, loved one, family.
So what has been the stumbling block in many cases? Obviously, willingness might be one, but in terms of the matching issue and finding an appropriately compatible kidney for, a donor for someone who is in need.
So that has been an issue over the decades. And what we would do normally is, if your blood type was not compatible, we would say you're not a candidate for a particular person, even though you're a willing donor, which is one of the things that we require. We have been able to develop technologies and techniques that allow someone who doesn't necessarily have a compatible blood group to be able to donate. And this is a tremendous leap beyond what we were able to do previously.
So one thing you're talking about here is what we call ABO compatibility, which is your blood type compatibility. And so there have been some immunologic research or immunologic breakthroughs that have enabled us to make people more compatible?
Absolutely. We naturally have antibodies within our blood to people who are different from us, essentially. Someone with a different blood type, we would have antibodies against those other blood types,
causing us to reject that kidney should it be put into our bodies.
Exactly. However, we were able over the last couple of decades to find that we can actually reduce and get rid of these naturally occurring antibodies, so that we can, through a process, usually takes a few days, we can essentially reduce our antibody levels to predetermined levels that we consider safe for transplantation, and then successfully perform such a transplant.
So in a sense, what you're doing is perhaps making people who would be incompatible miraculously compatible.
Exactly.
A major breakthrough.
That is a major breakthrough. It is absolutely a major breakthrough. There are certain aspects of it which you still don't understand. For example, why is it after 3 months, your level of antibodies that you previously had doesn't just rebound and come back in a tremendous amount. There is a process which occurs, which is very poorly understood at this time, unfortunately, but we know that if you can make it through the first 3 months and you accept your graft and your level of antibodies remain low, somehow you're like someone who got a compatible transplant thereafter.
Wow. So it can be, while you might not understand all the specific details as to how it happens, it can be truly successful.
Absolutely. And we at Upstate have been able to do this. Very successfully, we're able to get a young woman and her brother donated. This is her second transplant. She's been taken care of Upstate ever since she was a child. And her brother, who actually works for the state, volunteered to be this donor. The issue was their
compatibility.
The blood types were different. However, we were able to put her through this process whereby we reduced the level of her antibodies and give her medication to help ensure that these antibodies do not rebound, then perform a transplant. And we were able to successfully do this.
It's quite amazing.
Quite amazing.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on air. I'm Linda Cohen here with kidney transplant surgeon Dr. Vaughn Whitaker. We're talking about very significant breakthroughs that have increased the options for patients awaiting kidney transplants. So that's one whole area. How about all of these, what we call donor chains, or a different methodology for finding donor kidneys?
So this is another method whereby you may have an incompatible donor. So let's say we have a similar situation. Blood group is not compatible. However, for whatever reason, sometimes the recipient or the patient requiring a transplant may have antibodies to that particular donor. What we may be able to do is find another pair who are in a similar position in that they're not compatible to each other. However, the recipient on either side may be compatible to the donor of another pair.
So you're basically matching pairs and doing exchanges across pairs.
Exactly. Who may not be necessarily having brought that particular donor to the table, as it were.
And then there are more complicated. I mean, to me, sometimes I've started to read about these and I need a graph to kind of see how it all gets laid out. But where one person who is an altruistic donor starts what they call almost a chain of events in terms of these kinds of donor exchanges.
That is correct. We have heroes, and all donors really are heroes. But we have these persons who will come forward. No ulterior motive, just having a desire to help someone. And they then become an undirected or altruistic donor. If you have a number of pairs that are incompatible, that particular donor could then give to someone with whom they're compatible. And the person to whom they've given, if they have a donor who is incompatible with them, we can then locate someone who they're compatible with, and so on and so forth. And literally, what we have found through mathematical analyses is that the larger these chains are, or the larger the pools are, the more successful you can in finding persons to whom you can match this other donor who was otherwise incompatible to their recipient.
So these types of paired exchanges, these chains of paired exchanges, are taking place across institutions as well, I understand. Not just within an institution like Upstate, but across.
Absolutely. We were able to perform this successfully in our own institution, the first in Upstate. But in addition to that, there are mechanisms whereby this can be achieved across institutions within the same state, so local institutions. And that's how a lot of that started initially. But as we have done more mathematical modeling and realized that the larger the pool, the greater the odds of matching someone who is going to be compatible, we have been able to do it across state lines, as far as East and West Coast. And the other issue is that it doesn't have to be contemporaneous. It can occur later in time.
That's what I wanted to understand. Help us understand how that happens. So if you have a donor who's giving, so one surgery takes place removing a kidney can be then kept viable until it's transplanted. How much time in between can occur?
Well, typically this is planned way in advance, and this is one of the challenges of doing these operations because of the logistics that
is involved. I would think so, especially across the continent.
Exactly. So you have to arrange a plane flight. Usually these are commercial plane flights, but the kidney can remain viable and healthy up to 48 hours.
Wow.
Clearly, we plan to reduce this amount of time to the barest minimum and plan the procedure so that only the flight time is the only factor that is not one of those that we can vary much. But 12 hours, 24 hours, these kidneys will work just as well as a kidney that was just transplanted fresh, especially from a living donor.
I also understand that right now, so these are amazing breakthroughs. I mean, both the ABO compatibility issue and this issue of these paired exchanges seems to just broaden the potential for living donor kidneys if you have willing participants vastly, so that perhaps this whole idea of this very long wait list could be shortened as we go forward because of the demand for kidneys having grown so exponentially. We talked in the last interview about the fact that with the increase in obesity and diabetes in this country, the demand for kidney transplants and people in end-stage renal disease has just grown tremendously.
Absolutely.
So there's all the more reason why we need to expand the opportunities in the ways you've described. But I understand there's also going to be, in the little bit of time we have left, there's going to be a change in the scoring system as to how this all takes place. Can you explain that?
So it's a major change. It's been 10 years in the making, and it's the kidney allocation system. We fondly refer to it as CAS. It rolls out in December of this year. It seeks to give advantage to those recipients who have what we call a high panel of reactive antibodies. Typically, these are patients who have a lot of antibodies and cannot be matched very easily. They will get priority. They will have access to organs that are far and flung away. The other thing is your dialysis start time will not be a factor. So if you've been on dialysis for 20 years and you're just being listed, those 20 years prior will then count towards your priority.
So they're really trying to make it a more equitable system and one where people who are in greatest need will receive the kidneys.
Absolutely.
Incredible breakthroughs, wonderful information, very hopeful for all of us in this region to hear about all these wonderful things taking place. Thank you so very much. My guest has been Dr. Vaughn Whitaker, Assistant Professor of Surgery specializing in hepatobiliary and pancreatic surgery and transplant services at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.